Off the ball. Rugby.
In 20, 30 years, I don't think people will be talking and saying, well, that wasn't a great Australia side, or they were going through a tough period, or it'll go down as a series win in Australia.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball daily.
You're welcome back. So, Football Families is a new documentary set to air on RTE tomorrow night, the first episode tomorrow night, and it'll run for 3 weeks. It starts at 10:15 on RTE1, and as I say, 3 weeks. It's fantastic. We've seen a good bit of it. Nathan, I know you've watched the full thing. I've caught the first episode earlier on. Happy to say we've got two of the stars of the show with us on the show today. Cullen Barron, who is the Shells Academy Director, is with us in studio. Cullen, how are you doing?
Not bad.
And we've got John Moore, who is manager of the Shelburne under 15 team in the National League. How are you getting on, John? Thanks for taking the call.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
So this documentary is essentially the story of a collection of young players hoping to make it, but it is also crucially the story of their families and their upbringing and their own lives outside of football as well. The initial comparison I have is with something like Hoop Dreams, which is obviously one of the great documentaries. It's like an Irish football version of it. And the thing that connects those two documentaries is that every single young fella or young girl in this case in episode two is just this unbelievable desire to actually succeed. And there's this constant balancing act, John, which I might throw to you, first of all, between trying to allow these kids to thrive and to participate and also allowing these kids to have this competitive edge and this want to win, because I know that's a bit of a tension.
Yeah, well, I think the kids, first and foremost, have to be made understand it's all about enjoyment and being as good as you can be. We wouldn't make them any false promises when they come into the club, but we're going to give them the platform to be as good as they can be. And if that brings them into fulfilling their dreams of maybe playing for Ireland or making even the children's first team, brilliant. But if it makes them better people, well, then that's also a success.
Yeah, that is a big part of this, and also trying to help them along that path, Cullen, is something that I presume delivers a lot of fulfilment to you, because you do have to see this as a fairly holistic project when it comes to working with these kids.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, the ambition of every player, I think, that's playing in the National League is they want to play for Shelburne First Team, they want to play for the Irish International Team. And John mentioned it there, it's about maximising potential of the player. So we never ask them to probably do anything else but maximise the potential that they have. And to do that takes a massive amount of commitment and effort, both from the player themselves, the parents and the coaches involved, which is huge. But the satisfaction for us is seeing them become hopefully professional players, if they don't, become better people, you know, be successful in life and come back and have positive memories about what they've done in the club.
Quite often with a documentary like this and a bit of insight, we learn a lot of new things, and maybe there are some misnomers out there that get corrected as a result of cameras coming inside the dressing room. What for you is the thing that you're most looking forward to having out in the open now in terms of us learning a little bit more about an academy setup?
Well, look, I suppose there's a few things. One of the most important things is the good work that's being done in academies. Do you know, I know there's been a lot of doom and gloom and talk about funding, etc. But there's a lot of things that you can do right without money. I think we have a lot of good principles and values as a club that we try to install in the players. I would hope that shines through the episodes. I've seen clips myself, but I hope that would shine through. The other thing as well is that they give the players an opportunity to maybe experience cameras being around. It's something that they will experience in a career if they go on to be successful in football. So to show them young players, both on the male and the female side, about the qualities that they have and the dreams that they have, them high ambitions are something that's in their head very clear. And I think while we are doing the best that we can, you can't help but also show that side of we're under-resourced, we're overworked in what we're trying to do. You become a jack of all trades and a master of none sometimes in the role that you have as academy director or as a coach. And how much better could it be if there was funding there and the resources there to give these players the platform they deserve?
How then does that balance up with giving them that best opportunity to make the best of themselves?
Look, as a club, we're always trying to do more and more. So you're always looking at the programmes that you have. The club has been extremely supportive. Like, we would use Sport Ireland on a Wednesday night, have done for the last 2.5 years, because of the level of facilities that they have there. So does that improve the players in turn? Absolutely. The environment changes everything for a player. You walk into a professional environment like that, the mindset changes. So the club has been extremely supportive from that regard. And we've started double sessions on a Tuesday. We've done that for the last 2.5 years. So all of a sudden you've got the players in for a 6.5 hour period. They're doing 2 pitch sessions, gym session, analysis session. They're having food on site. So, but we would love to be able to do that twice a week or 3 times a week. It's just not possible. It's not possible to do what we're doing without very, very good facilities. And you also have to have the ability to be able to do it on demand. And at the moment, if we're in a situation where we want to do more, we have to pay more. We have to pay more for facilities. It's as simple as that.
One of the fascinating things from this as well, John, and I'm not sure was it done deliberately, was that the backgrounds of the footballers are so varied. Different socioeconomic factors at play, different levels of interest from a parent standpoint, and that all goes into the mix, I suspect, in terms of trying to get the best out of these young players.
Yeah, 100%. I think one of the challenges of a coach in an academy is to get to know the family as much as the player, because we only have the players for X number of hours every week, whereas they're at home 24/7. So it's really important to have a good relationship with the family and to understand the challenges that some families have. And obviously we're able to help with that in any way we can. But it's also very important, I think, to point out that sometimes the parents have unrealistic expectations. And I think Colin was always very clear when the players first come into the academy, to make that clear, to have realistic expectations, that not every player coming into the academy is going to play for the first team. But I think if they're setting out with the ideal of being as good as you can be, well, then that's success. And I think they can learn some great life lessons through that. So it's really, really important for the parents to understand that, but also for us to get to know the parents and to see if there are problems that sometimes can relate to the player's performance. And we can take account of that as things go on.
John, you've been around Irish football for many years, and you know, we can even go back and talk about the schoolboy system back in the day and been involved in one of the elite clubs with Belvedere. Have the expectations and the pressure from parents changed, say, from 30 years ago?
Well, I think that it's a whole new landscape. Like 25, 30 years ago, even 10 years ago, the ambition for the players was to get a schoolboy cap and to be signed by Man United or Arsenal. So the Brexit situation has changed all that. So the ambition now is to make an academy team. And the problem I find with a lot of the parents is they think if they've been signed, say, for the Shelf Development Squad as a 13-year-old, some of the parents nearly think the kid has made it. And the facts prove different. Like, the number of kids that come in at 13 in any academy that are still there at 19 is probably a small enough percentage. But equally so, we take great pride in helping a player go right through from, say, under 5, under 6, right up through to the under-20s into the first team. But I think the parents' ambitions, they think it's easier to make it now because it's not a question of coming to Man United. And it isn't, because the best players are still the best players.
This documentary, Owen, was obviously recorded towards the end of last season when Shelburne's first team are winning the league title, and Damien Duff is a big part of the documentary and lots of little insights along the way. And like, one of the questions that Duff always asks is, you know, what is making it? Like, what does it mean? Because there's always another step. And even if you get to the Shell's first team, they often want to go to England. And then what, you might end up signing for a League One team, but you want to get to the Championship or the Premier League. You want to play for Ireland. And then even if you're playing for Ireland, are you having success with Ireland? Like, how difficult, Colm, is it to have those conversations with the parents of a 13-year-old kid? Like, are you selling the dream in any way? Or are you going, actually, success for your child might be having one good year with the Shells under 14 team, and look, then we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, look, I think you have to be open and honest with people from the beginning. That's certainly one of the values that we have as a club, and I think over time that works best, that honesty with people. Just as you talk about it, I seen a stat the other day, Quiveen Kelleher was the only player in the under-17s Irish international team that's gone on and had a cap for the first team. That's a common trend, you know, across Europe.
Well, that's reality. Across Europe, that's interesting, because Stephen Kenny obviously would have pointed out about this lost generation where you had 7 or 8 years of under 15 players, Irish under 15 players, and none of them went on to play for the senior international team.
Yep.
And we all know how talented you need to be to play for the Ireland under 15 team, and then for none of them to go all the way through to play at senior level.
That's reality, you know, and it really bites when you hear things like that. So when parents and players come into the academy, you have to be very honest with them in regards to it. It's very difficult to foresee. It's actually, unless you're Harry Potter, you can't foresee where a player is going to be in 2 years' time. It's just, it's totally impossible. Anybody that says that they can is factually and scientifically, it's impossible. You can make a good estimate. You can have a good idea. I think the biggest factors for me with regards to players actually making it is resolve and mentality, their discipline, their attitude to continue to strive even when they experience setbacks. And most of the best players have had setbacks, but it's how they deal with them setbacks that become massively important along the pathway to be an athlete, regardless of what sport you're playing. So for us, it's not, we see Billy signing at under 14 and we believe that we want to sign him because he's going to play in Shelburne's first team in 3 years' time. That conversation just doesn't happen because it's not a realistic conversation to have.
That's fascinating. So how do you actually work on building resolve in a young footballer if that is actually the biggest sign of if you're going to make it?
So what we would do is we would have players who train up. So we'll experience them going in and training up and performing in that environment where they're obviously against physically superior players straight away. We see how they handle that. And sometimes, and this is probably maybe something that I'm revealing to you guys and the coaches and managers may, I have said it to them in the past, but I will then remove a player back and put him into his own team environment and then look at how he reacts to that situation.
Because he could get complacent.
Absolutely. And he can hopefully sometimes, and some of the best ones do, question, why have I come back down? And it can be sometimes because you haven't performed when you've gone up there. So now you need to go back and perform where you are. Hopefully that then sparks and motivates them to do more and try more. But it's certainly not, you know, you've gone up and you stay up. To have resolve, you have to have setbacks. So for me, I would say it's important for young players to experience failure when they play, to lose matches, to experience that, to not play in the best team per se, but to play in a club where they have a clear methodology and philosophy to train and develop the players over a long period of time. But we would go away to tournaments all the time. So we, like every team in our club in the National League on the boys' side, it's difficult at the girls' side because of the age groups, 16s, 18s, 17s, 19s. But we would experience playing in elite level tournaments. So John, his team would have been away last year in the East Mallorca Cup. We've played Borussia Dortmund, we've played Barcelona, we've had our arses handed to us when we've played in some of them games. And that really opens the eyes of the players and the parents about levels, you know.
What's a dressing room like after getting your arse handed to you by a so-called super club?
Reality hits.
Right.
It's reality. The player. So you can then talk to the players about the things that we probably really annoy them about on a weekly basis, about standards, you won't get away with that at a higher level, your first touch, your concentration, the speed you're playing at, the decisions that you're making. It might be fine, you might get away with it when you play a lesser team at the weekend and you win 7-0, or maybe you draw, but they still don't get it. And then they go and they play at this higher level. And then every detail gets punished. And it's like, whoa, right? And then it's like, So we would always see a kick on then for 2 or 3 weeks with the players. They come back, they're training at a higher intensity, at a higher level. There's a reaction. And then some of them drop back off and others go, no, that's where I want to be. That's where I want to get to. And they continue to push on. So that and alone, them tournaments are massive for the players' development.
John, are those players
I think those tournaments also underline for the players the importance of what you do in your own time. We played Real Madrid back in June in the Mallorca Cup, and we were actually staying in the same hotel as them. So we got some great information from the coaches in between the games. And Real Madrid at our age group will be training 5 times a week, sometimes double sessions. So we're always emphasising to the players the importance of what you're doing in your own time. And we're giving them homework and giving them ideas to improve their technical ability, different practices they can do with a friend, or with a ball against the wall that Duffer often talks about. And the number of players that do that and the number that don't is really interesting. And you can see it in the players in 6 months' time, without giving them any tests, the players that have been taking that information on board and gone and working on their own time. Because, as Colin says, we don't have the resources to have them in as often as Real Madrid do. So a lot of the time, the players can help themselves by not being on their PlayStations. And again, we can end the fellas who are doing that, and we can end the fellas who aren't.
Are those results relevant to what you're trying to achieve, in that if it's built around the individual? So you could lose heavily to Real Madrid or to Borussia mm-hmm. Dortmund, but actually Johnny on the left wing
yep.
could show that he's very comfortable at that level. And actually then there's a success in that. We yep. have a guy here who's able to play. Do you then have to treat him differently to mm-hmm. the other 10 guys?
So that's the measurement. So the way I look at it, when we go to a tournament and I'm not involved in them teams directly anymore with regards to, I don't go onto the sideline and coach them. We have a men's academy manager now, James, who will do that. So I sit back and I try to observe. And the way I look at it is I just go, can one of our players, if he was wearing a Real Madrid kit, would he look like he could play in that team? That's the way I analyse it. So could we take our best player on that day and say, if he was playing in that Real Madrid team, would he look like he was one of their players?
And how often are you saying yes?
Rarely. And that's worrying. Honestly, that's just like we watched the final was Ajax against Real Madrid, and I was texting Damien Duff and I was texting Luke during the game, and I said that the two Real Madrid centre backs, in my opinion, could easily play in our 20s and possibly play in our first team. And he wrote back kind of laughy faces, and then I took a picture of the two of them and videos. They were about 6'2". Two-footed, balance, incredible, decision-making, incredible, physically miles ahead. And I'm like, I actually tweeted about it at the time, that I would say if our under-20s had played them, it would have been a very close match. And they were under-15s. No. That's reality. That's not me. I'm not saying that. There's no benefit for me to say that. Do I believe that our players, if they spent a longer period of time over there at the level, would adapt to the level? Yes. 100%. 100%. And that's the issue, is you never really know how far a player can go until you stretch them. But if they were stretched in that environment for a longer period of time, their ability to improve accelerates really quickly. And that's the difficult part at the moment, from an academy perspective in the country.
John, we've obviously heard Will Clark throughout the last few years be fairly stark in the numbers that he's presenting and the reality of the situation and how we compare with other countries across Europe. Again, going back to, say, when Belvedere were producing a lot of players for underage squads and players who go on to play for senior international squads, has that gap grown bigger, do you feel, between the elite in this country and the elite across Europe?
I think the answer is yes, because we're not giving the players the same number of contact hours as anywhere else in Europe. I think Colin probably has the figures more than I, but in terms of the number of full-time academy staff, like, I think Shells have 3, and everybody else is a volunteer. I couldn't do the job I'm doing at the moment if I'm still working full-time. I just wouldn't have the time. So that's a huge problem. I think the Ajax were in the same hotel as us in the last tournament we were talking about, and I think they have something like 30 full-time academy staff. So it's a huge gap in terms of having the coaches available to coach the players, having the facilities available to train them more often. So 100% we're falling way behind like that. And like, there's some sort of what you might consider minnow countries in Eastern Middle Europe who have far more full-time academy staff than the Irish people have, the Irish teams have.
Like, we're at August at this point. Will Clark and his plan for academies in this country is coming on a year at this point. It was definitely autumn time last year. Mm-hmm. By the time he gets into the Dáil, it's around election time. That's a whole year in a player's development gone. Have you started to now consider what we can do to make up the talent gap, even compared with some of the top clubs in Europe, with the resources that we do have right now?
Yeah, I constantly think about it. I've been constantly thinking about it for 5 years. I've been thinking about it for probably 15 years, to be honest, since I've been coaching in this country. Obviously, my role as academy director is to try to offer the best possible development pathway for players holistically. So you constantly think about that. In fairness, we've got brilliant owners. You know, Mickey O'Rourke, Neil Doyle have backed the club financially massively. They've improved year on year. As John mentioned, we now have 3 full-time staff in the academy, and their roles are football. And we have a women's academy manager, Gemma Murphy, who's a part-time staff member as well. So we're constantly trying to evolve to make it better. As I mentioned already, we've signed an 18-year lease in the AUL, which will improve, from a facilities perspective, what we're able to do. We will have our own full-size Astro built by December. So now we're looking at, every time there's school holidays, contact time, more coaches. I'm looking at athletic development, looking at the possibility of a full-time athletic development coach. That will then just open up a different avenue for what we can do. I would foresee, hopefully in the future, that this time next year, if I'm sitting here, that we will have had players in training every single day for the whole summer, from the age of probably 12 to 13 years of age all the way through to our under 20. So we will ramp up our contact time hugely, but it would be brilliant to be able to have the support network around it. That will be, I foresee, which I'm fine with, me going back onto the pitch, you know, me taking more sessions, academy manager taking more sessions, Aaron, who's head of our small side of games and full-time, has been on the pitch, the athletic development coach being on the pitch. And we're fine with that, but that then impacts, for me, it impacts other things, other macro things like sports psychology for players, like diet, nutrition, like planning different talks, which we have done in the past for our players. So everything impacts on something else, but ultimately, I always have believed the mantra that players are developed on the pitch. So the most important work is what happens on the pitch with the players. That's the first step. If you can improve that, well, then everything else can be done holistically around it. But in saying that, if we could do that earlier and better, well, then God knows what we could do in 5 to 6 years' time.
The documentary covers a range of age grades and some very young players who are coming in and just starting out in the academy football, and guys then who are going to be looking at the senior level and trying to break into that first team. For the players who would have gone to England traditionally and tried to sign for Manchester United at 16, so that Brexit generation, when they're looking at their options at 16 and potentially Italy or Spain or one of the European countries where they can move to, what's your advice when those opportunities come in? Because, well, obviously Evan Ferguson would be the prime example where people question if he'd had to stay in Ireland for 2 extra years, would he have been in the position he was when he was 18? Mm-hmm. Damien Duff himself, when I spoke to him a few months ago about Mason Melia and the success of Mason Melia and the transfer to Tottenham and the fee for Pats and the fact he's playing first team football, was like, I'd still much prefer to be in England at 16 than playing first team football with Pats at 17, that, you know, he's going to go over there and find himself behind. So if a 16-year-old is approached by a club in Italy, what do you say to them?
I think every individual player has to be looked at, his circumstances, his family, etc. There is absolutely zero doubt in my mind that what a club in Europe can offer in comparison to us is non-comparable. 95% of the time I would say go, but that 5% might be for a different reason for a player who you feel the support network isn't there and he could just sink in that system. But from a football development perspective, there's a zero comparison. Like Finn Sherlock, who was with us for 2.5 years and signed for Hoffenheim at 16 years of age, I speak with him still consistently. He has 7 full-time staff in his age group. Like, he's 7 full-time staff at his age group. He goes in on a Monday morning, talking to him, and he goes in on a Monday morning after his game on the weekend, and he has a personal 30-minute analysis session on his clips from the weekend with 2 of the full-time staff members.
Is that incredibly deflating? Like, is it a very deflating atmosphere to work in? Because on the one side, you know, when results don't go well at senior international level, everyone starts doing a deep dive into Irish football and are criticising everywhere that, you know, coaches aren't good enough, the facilities aren't good enough. Yeah. And you're in the midst of this going, well, we literally don't have anything. We don't have enough to offer these guys. So, and the small amount of staff you have, is it hard to keep motivation high?
They're extremely self-motivated. Like, I'm very driven in what I do. But yeah, like, so when we go to them tournaments, I always come back a little bit depressed. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, Jesus. Do you know, the gap is so big and you want to do so much more and you're struggling to do that and you're trying to rack your brain as to how you can do it and what you can do more of, etc. So,
yeah,
like, it's difficult. It is difficult. You
so
know?
So in his case, he's from Cavan, if I'm not mistaken. The work he had to do in Ireland, I presume in terms of commuting to...
Yep.
Shells, like there's a whole heap of work for him to get to that spot. Can you talk us through that a little bit and how his story developed?
Yeah, like Finn, from day one, I remember him coming in, very athletic, moved extremely well. It's some footballers move differently, you know, and he moved very at ease. When he decided then that he would sign, you could quickly tell from the way he trained that he was a high achiever, that he had this like real focus and desire to like give me more, give me feedback. The harder you push him, the more he takes it and the more he'll give you back, if you know what I mean. Obviously the commute from Coot Hill for him all the time was incredible. Like his parents, massive dedication to get him there, great family background. John, who mentioned it before, like, you know, without people like John, it's impossible. There was times where Finn would get the bus from Cavan, leave school. He would talk to me that he was doing his homework on the bus up. You know, for the early sessions on a Tuesday, John would collect him at the airport, bring him to training. He'd do his training. He'd do his homework. Then when they have the homework app, he'd sometimes get back on the bus or sometimes his parents would collect him. But that was like a normal to him. It didn't faze him. And he's got that unique percentage of players that like he can be an elite. So when I talk about that, how do you notice that in a player? So yes, he was very, I won't say gifted from a football perspective. He works extremely hard at his football and he became better. Was he technically the best player I've seen? No. There's players who wipe the floor with him technically at that age, but what he did is his acceleration of improvement was massive because we were able to push him in with the 17s, didn't faze him. You know, people don't say it probably wasn't talked about much, but he was the youngest ever goal scorer for Shelburne. He played in the first team at 15 before he went in pre-season games and he scored.
Mm.
But to him, it was like, it was very simple. It wasn't a big deal. He took it all in his stride. And that's why I believe a player like him, he absolutely needed to go to reach his potential.
It is striking in the documentary that there's very little talk about the technical ability of the players and what they can do with the ball, that it's all about the mentality in the conversation among the coaches and that ability to learn and to absorb information, that sort of inner drive, as John was saying, that when they're not getting the amount of sessions that they're at home and they're doing their own thing. And there's a kid in it, Killian, who I think is probably the star of the show, who just, the football is stuck to him morning, noon and night, and he's only a little lad, and that's probably a conversation we come back to in a minute. That's, we spend so much time looking at these incredibly talented 12, 13, 14-year-olds. How long does it take to figure out the guys who, all right, lovely footballer, but does he have, and can they learn that?
You can figure it out fairly quickly. Their home life has a big part to play in it. Their parents, as John mentioned earlier, they're with us very, very short period of time they're with us. So what the conversation is when they go home, the type of people that their parents are. Like when we talk about a kid like Killian, for example, like a ball is stuck to him. When he comes to training with a ball in his bag, he trains like before training and he trains after training.
I don't know if Killian's going to play for Shelburne, but he's definitely going to manage Shelburne.
Yeah, well, 100%. Obsessed with the game.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Obsessed with the game.
It's sort of like if you had a camera on a 13-year-old Brian Kerr, I feel.
Yeah. A brilliant character.
Yeah.
Do you know, he's an absolutely brilliant character and that's captured in the programme. So the reason why we don't talk about technique and everything so much is because, for me, if you talk about the best sports people, they're obsessed. So they become obsessed with the game. So are we going to spend part of the 4 hours or 4.5 hours that we have with the players on the pitch working on technique? Yes, we'll spend a small amount of time. But as John mentioned earlier, we tell them, here's the technical aspects you need to improve on. Now go and spend 10 hours a week on your own improving that. Like 100% they will improve them things. So we need to talk to them about the resolve, the individual tactics, their awareness, their decision-making and things like that. So you improve them aspects and then the psychological aspects become really is what you can see in training. That's where we can press on them a little bit more. That's where you can see if they have the resolve. That's where you can see, do they look for feedback? Do they ask questions? How do I improve? How do I get better? Are they watching their games back? Or are they just watching the goals from the games back? You know, that's the type of things that you can then tell in the character, whether they have it or not. And to be quite honest, that's something that every parent believes that their kid has it, but they actually don't. And that's a difficult thing. That's
sometimes it's all right if the kid doesn't have it or doesn't want it.
Absolutely.
Like, and 100%. That, it is called Footballing Families, yeah. And there's a lot of families featured in this from various different backgrounds and have various different attitudes to what their children are doing. I suspect maybe between the two of you, Cullum and John, you might have a different way of dealing with the parents from time to time. That, John, you're more than happy to lay it on the line with them as to what's happening. What do you want from the parents of one of your academy kids?
Well, the first thing we need often is to support our kids, because you don't have to be living in Cavan. If you're living anywhere in Dublin, coming to the AUL four times a week requires a commitment from the mother or the father to drive them there, hang around for 2 hours or maybe more, and then off and go home again. So we need the parents to be committed. But there's other things, like I remember having a meeting with a parent a couple of years ago about the player's diet, and the mother in concern took great offence because I asked her to keep a diary of what the kid was eating because we could see he was putting on weight. And she was actually told a few home truths. I was explaining to her, well, he can't eat Cocoa Puffs for breakfast if she doesn't buy them. And her attitude was, oh, well, he likes them. And you have to educate the parents as much as the players. You have to educate them about things like sleep. Like if a 13-year-old is allowed to bring his phone to bed with him, is that the kid's fault or the parents' fault? Like we would have had some very good talks about the attributes to make be a footballer apart from being technically proficient. So things like sleep and rest and diet are very important. But if a kid wants to bring his phone to bed with him at 13, well, the mum or the dad can say, no, don't bring it to bed. Go up to the bedroom and go sleep. So it's very, very important to be honest with the parents. And sometimes the parents have to be taken to task in a nice, friendly way, but nonetheless taken to task. And I have a bit of experience in doing that. I can be a good cop or I can be a bad cop.
Did they stop buying the Cocoa Pops?
Cocoa Pops are now banned.
They're now banned.
It's actually a great story. We were away on one of those trips a couple of years ago and Colm had given the players very clear instructions about what they couldn't eat. And we were out at one of the venues watching, again, not involving us, and a certain player was seen having a burger and a Coke. And he'd only taken the first bite of the burger and the first sip of the Coke, and Colm arrived and threw both in the bin. So it was an expensive lesson for the player concerned. I think the particular parent wrote a letter in complaining that Colm had been starving their child. But that's just a little thing aside. But the parents do have to be educated about the things they can do to help their player fulfil their dreams.
People are going to sound a bit soft asking this, but is there any way for it to be less ruthless? So you're bringing in players 12, 13 from the north side of Dublin, taking them out of their local club, away from their friends. They're obviously making the decision to go. And then the step from 14 to 15, I'm sure there's a turnover of players there, four or five, that's it, the dream is over, off you go back to your club, might have moved on, the team may no longer exist.
So I think there's just something that you touched on there for us. So we have teams from under eight, so we're one of the National League teams that are in a unique place that we're actually trying to develop them. Our Super Reds Academy starts at five, so we're trying to develop them over a long period of time. I believe the player development starts at the age of 6-7 years of age.
And what's the turnover like?
So we would have internal targets with regards to players coming from the DDSL Premier under 13 into our 14s National League team. The aim every year is 10 players. Now, we've got different challenges in that because you also have the other National League teams who may not have an under 13s DDSL Premier team watching Shelburne under 13s every week and then trying to tap them up, etc. That's just a part of the game. That's the way it is. It's when we talked about like maximizing potential, that's all we asked them. So it's like a kid isn't frowned upon because they aren't at the level, but they've tried every bit of hard as the National League player. There's, unfortunately, there's no easy way to have the conversation. you know, what we make sure we do is we give a mid-season report, which was just done a couple of weeks ago, to all of our players and the parents, so they have an understanding of this is where he's at right now, and the season will end in November, and then it will be a discussion around retain or release. But they can't say that, oh, it's come out of the blue, we never had a conversation, there wasn't any indication, there was no, he wasn't given any feedback about the areas that he or she needed to work on. So we try to give feedback as much as possible to have them discussions. And I think that helps when it comes to the end of the season and you are having that discussion.
What about broad picture at the moment then? John, we might kick things off with you on this one. Like, we've had plenty of conversations with regards to the aligned calendar in terms of Irish football, and that seems to be one that's always brought up. Is that for you a big topic of conversation that still needs to be had, that can lead to a better future for Irish football, or is that actually a misplaced focus? Should we be having other conversations about how things can be a little bit better in the not too distant future?
I think it's probably a misplaced focus, really. Like, even though in theory we have a summer or a calendar year season, we're on the go really nearly for 12 months, certainly for 10, between pre-season training, training camps during breaks and all that sort of stuff. So I think most teams with proper ambition, most clubs with proper ambition, are on the go all the time. Like, you're playing in tournaments, that sort of stuff. I think there are more important issues for the FAI to concern themselves about, like ensuring that everybody has proper facilities to play on. Like, the majority of the National League clubs can probably go and play the games. Some of them play in their National League stadiums, like, say, Athlone Town. Others play in fairly decent sort of hard facilities. But there are a number who don't play facilities that would really pass muster. And that's something that certainly could be addressed, I think, by the FAI. I also think there could be an argument made to play more games. I know, I think this season, for the first time at under 17 level, there's a blitz tournament involving teams from Northern Ireland. And over the last number of years, we've regularly played Linfield, Cliftonville, Glentoran. And it doesn't cost you a lot of money to go there for them to come up here. And it's just a chance to play different teams rather than playing Pats or Rovers every week. And I think that can be a great help to the players just to play more games.
How big an issue is the playing Pats and Rovers every week? Again, the depth within Ireland, and we have a lot of academies, and we've too many academies, I think most people would feel, that a lot of your players are having too many easy games across the year, that they're not being challenged on a regular enough basis. And I think that's often put forward then as an argument when you get an Ireland under 15 squad and it's made up primarily of players from Shamrock Rovers and St. Patrick's Athletic, I think, mm-hmm. at the moment. But again, like it was 30 years ago, primarily of players playing in Dublin.
Yeah. I think there's a few issues that you've mentioned. The first off, I don't envy Will Clark's job. Mm. I don't envy him in what he's trying to implement. I think that if we were to currently look at the under-20s elite tier, the under-17s elite tier, and the under-15s elite tier at the moment, I would say that, off the top of my head, 5 of the teams of the 8 in every group are the same at 3 age groups. Okay, so you've got straight away there's a benchmark there, and if you look back throughout the last couple of years, I'm sure you would see a benchmark. So for me, one thing that could be addressed pretty quickly and easily is that at 20s and 17s, the best teams should be playing against the best teams more often. Do I have a problem with playing Shamrock Rovers or Pats 12 times in a season? Absolutely not if the games are competitive. So especially at 20s and 17s, for me, that's something that could be done and should be done immediately. That, whether that's Galway United, Cork City, Shelburne, Pats, Rovers, Bowes, etc., UCD, the clubs who are consistently, although you mightn't say that they have the best facilities, but there's a correlation between the clubs that are probably trying to do it as best they possibly can and the results that are happening on the pitch. So is it better for our under-20s to be in a 10-team league and play the teams 3 times than to spend the first 6 months of the season potentially playing games against teams that you might only get 2 or 3 good games? 100%, that's a no-brainer to me. That's a no-brainer to me. That makes absolutely no sense. So I think there's bars, so people will say, oh, well, how do you do that? There's parameters. Is it fair, like, is everything going to be fair? No. Is it fair that in the Bundesliga, that if the first team gets relegated, that your academy teams get relegated? Is that fair? No. But that's the decision that they make.
Mm.
So it's like, it's not going to fit everybody and it's not going to suit everybody. But I do think that there's benchmarks that we have over the last 4 to 5 years with the National League developing that, especially at 20s and 17s, as I said, we have a responsibility because we can't get them into full-time football, but then at least make the games at the weekend the most competitive they can possibly be for them ages. I think that that could be done.
Yeah, and I think part of the funding, if and when it comes, there's going to be an academy mark and funding will be divvied up depending on what you're putting in and the facilities and all of that. And it may mean that, you know, some academies that aren't delivering at the moment end up shutting down and there's an amalgamation of certain academies. It does feel, John, though, that for certain parts of the country, it is similar to 30 years ago. Like, I remember getting in a car from Mayo, and I think you were coaching the Belvedere team. Now, there was three very good footballers in it, and me, who was, no matter how stuck they were, never even got out of the car. But they were having to come up and play in the DDSL for Belvedere at under 15, under 16 level to have any chance of being seen for international level, for any chance of progressing in their career. That despite the work that's been done to spread out academies across the country, in large parts of particularly more rural areas, the opportunities still aren't there.
100%. Like back in the day, talking about Belvedere, like pre-National League academies, the Belvos, the Kevins, the Cherry Orchards, all had players coming from the country. Like in Belvedere's, I remember Richie Ryan came from Tipperary. We had lads coming from Galway. We had lads coming from Athlone. John McGrath, we had to play for Aston Villa, came from West Limerick. And I'm sure Kevins and, as I say, Cherry Orchards, you know, teams like that, could tell similar stories. And we've seen players, I've certainly seen players in the last couple of years playing for some of the weaker academies. And you just have to wonder, is there progress being helped by playing in a really weak team, in a really weak sort of second or third tier? I don't really know what the solution is, but from the personal players' development, you would think they should be playing. Like, I remember Donald Rodigan, bless him, used to always have this mantra that the best players should train with the best players, be trained by the best coaches, and play with the best teams. Because that raises the bar for everybody. And I think there are certainly a number of kids in and around the country whose best interests aren't being served by playing in really weak teams. But I don't really know what the solution is. Would Finn Sherlock be in Hoffenheim if he was still playing in Cavan? And the answer is no.
Why then, Cullum, were the League of Ireland clubs so opposed to the FAI bringing it all in-house as a short-term measure while all of this academy funding is sorted out, where they would put on it at Easter training camps for the best 15, 16-year-old kids? They'd come, they'd stay, they'd get access to coaching across Easter, across the summer period, something that simply hasn't happened because of the opposition from the League of Ireland clubs.
Yeah, so at the moment they're piloting that. So they're pulling out of 14s and 15s, and that is ongoing at the moment. I think.
And are your players in with them?
Yeah, so we've sent our players in. Now they don't miss the double session on a Tuesday with ourselves. So they go in on a Wednesday morning. We've released them for Wednesday and Thursday for the pilot to see how it goes. We'll ask for feedback, etc., from our players, and then we'll make a decision going forward as whether we feel that it's the best for them or it's not. It's probably, there's not a simple answer what you've asked there, Nathan. I think there's a bigger picture there around, I can only talk about Shelburne. I can only talk about the club I'm involved in at the moment. We have owners who are extremely ambitious and have put a lot of money into the club. The discussion for the last 4 years has been around that money and the development of players would go into the clubs. So when they then are told about this potential pathways program that's going to happen, and the communication hasn't been right from the beginning, or maybe the details in the program haven't been revealed from the beginning, immediately people become skeptical. So is there a bigger picture here? What's going on? Why, if there's now money for this program, why hasn't that money been put into the clubs? So they're the questions that I'm just talking about from internally, from within our own club. For me, that the owner has every right to ask them questions. If he's going, well, I'm going to sign an 18-year lease and I'm going to build a new AstroTurf and I'm going to upgrade our pitches and I'm going to hire more full-time staff for the academy, well, then Why is the money that's clearly there now, why can't that money go to the clubs? Is there something else potentially going on that we're not being communicated with about? So, like I said, that skepticism comes. Is this something that they're trying to implement in the background for 3 to 5 years? Is it something that they're going to see now as an international national pathways program? And that's going away from what they have said for the last 3 to 5 years is that we want the clubs to develop the players. We want to try to develop the infrastructure. We want to develop the staffing, and we want the clubs to do that. So immediately...
Mm. The FAI would obviously say that this was a stopgap measure, that there was finances available after the ending of the emerging talent program, mm-hmm. and that, as we've just discussed, there's large parts of the area where players aren't getting enough contact yep. hours, and this is a chance. There's no point really doing it if you're not bringing in everybody and you're not bringing in the best players from Dublin as well, so they're exposed to that.
Yep. And I wouldn't disagree with it from a football perspective. I absolutely saw the logic, so I don't want to sound like I'm being two-faced within it. Like when Shane Robinson spoke about it the very first time at the Academy Managers meeting, I was one of the people who said, from a football development perspective, it's actually a very good idea. But then holistically, in terms of the detail around it, how is it going to work? How are the players selected? You know, who's going to be coaching the players? What does the program look like? Again, that wasn't revealed at the beginning, and that wasn't discussed at the beginning. So it went from a communication perspective of, this is what we'd like to do, and then it was like, oh, well, this is going to happen. But all of the middle parts, the key detail, probably wasn't revealed to the clubs in the correct manner. And that's why I believe that there was a kickback within it.
It comes highly recommended, Nathan, football families?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anyone interested in football, but I think even for, you know, young kids who are starting out in the game, to get a good insight into what the atmosphere is like in an academy, particularly I think for parents who are either rightly ambitious for their children or overly ambitious for their children, to understand the level of commitment that is required. And I think it will start a conversation at just the right time, maybe, around academy football, because the audit, as far as I'm aware, is taking place at the moment. The hope is that funding will come into place at the next budget. However, you know, we have to remind ourselves, as Will Clark pointed out in his most recent briefing, the money isn't going to come in straight away. Like, we're probably looking, I think we worked out at the time, by the time this academy funding comes through and those players progress, you're looking at 2040 by the time the first group of players who fully benefited from the sort of 7.5-8 million a year in funding. Like, so this, and nobody else is standing still in that 15-year period. So I just still worry that we're going to be having these conversations for the next 5, 10, 15 years as to, you know, what Borussia Dortmund are doing. And I suppose the other thing is, we're not aiming for Borussia Dortmund, we're aiming for Fleetwood Town.
Yeah.
On that positive note, you've been listening to John Moore, manager of the Shelburne under 15 team in the National League. John, thanks a million for taking the call this evening.
Thanks for having me.
And Colin Barron, Shell's Academy Director, has been here in studio. Colin, thanks for popping in.
Thanks a million.
Off the Ball Daily.